lots of reasons.
I think one of the biggest reasons for me is that I felt there was information that needed to be shared from the Black mental health provider perspective that I don't see a lot. I think I see a lot of like brown celebrities and like people who are sure definitely providing some resources.
Well, I mean, she pretty much said everything that I was going to say, but what I'm going to add is I get to do stuff with my friends.
Hey, that part.
That is one of the biggest motivators for me. I mean, I also started a podcast back in 2020 just because there was a lot of voices that I just felt like did not provide the clinical backing with a lot of the advice and suggestions that they were giving. Like, it's great to tell... to tell people, and TikTok for those people who didn't know, to tell people, like, you know, it's great to give people suggestions, but you want to tell them kind of like why the suggestions really kind of connect with whatever you're dealing with. And that's just something that we went to school for. And the fact that we're Black and women, I think really provides us with a unique perspective on some of these things. And I also want you guys to know that, like, your therapist is imperfectly perfect, and that's what provides them with that, you know, insight that makes you like them so much, right?
What people don't realize about me is that, yes, I am an extrovert, but I am introvert and private at certain things. I mean, people don't think about me, so there are certain things that I feel, for me, when it came to this, my husband was like, no, you have, like, people should hear what you have to say, like, you really gave great feedback, and you know, when I'm talking to you guys, I'm talking to friends, and I'm like, yeah, but does everybody need to hear it?
Right.
I'm like, do I need to do it? And I'm going to piggyback what Stephanie said. I was like, if I were to do this with anyone, because we, you guys, we have conversation for days on the phone and in person. And I think that's what was more motivating for me to do is that because we generally just have authentic conversations and talk about authentic things that affect us. And yeah, if anybody can walk away with taking anything from our conversation, I think this would be a platform for it. So that's my motivation for, you know, getting on here with you lovely.
Tell us.
So honestly, what I hope for the audience to gain from this podcast is really just like a sense of community, understanding,
safety.
Some safety and like being able to explore mental health and like what that really looks like without like shame. That it's not necessarily in a therapy setting, right? Like, so I'm not necessarily, I myself am not necessarily taking on what your experiences are, but hoping that this can kind of be a segue to help people be curious and perhaps connect with their own therapist.
Hello, folks. I'm going to be guiding us through a mindfulness exercise. So let's go ahead and get ourselves into a mindfulness position. So that looks like our back is straight but not rigid. Your feet are planted on the ground or in a way that feels comfortable to you. All right, let's start by taking a cleansing breath into our nose and out of our mouth. Notice the rise and fall of your chest. Notice how your body feels in your chair or on your bed. Notice how your arms feel by your side. I'd like you to visualize that you are sitting at a field on a blanket. It's warm and sunny outside. And you look up into the sky. And I want you to think of your thoughts as clouds that are coming and going across the sky. your thoughts may come as images, or they may look as words. Whatever your experience is, just notice them floating across the sky now. Be distracted or might notice some other things like sounds or other thoughts. That's okay. Just bring yourself back to noticing those clouds. Place them on the cloud and watch them just float away from you. Take a nice cleansing breath up through our nose and out of our mouth. Slowly bring your attention back to your space, noticing your butt on your chair or on your bed, noticing any sounds around you. Slowly blinking your eyes open, bring yourself back into the space. Thank you for joining me for mindfulness today.
Much needed.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Good beginning and starts.
Definitely needed to take a little, you know. My mind was really active today.
But... my mind is fully active. Since this is the first time, it's very active.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of thoughts. I can't say that, you know. Definitely I was one noticed. Mindfully, though.
I would say I definitely noticed some tension in my body, like in my feet specifically. And when I noticed that, the key was to be kind and gentle with myself, as well as all the different stuff that I'm hearing in the background.
So. That was the part. I had a lot of thoughts, like, what does that sound like? What's going on? And I'm like, okay, put that on the cloud, let it float away. Put that on the cloud, let it float away. So. Appreciate that, Simon.
Yeah, I like that. And you know when you said imagine yourself in the field on a blanket? I think my mind stayed there and tried to like ground myself. I said, I'm going to be on this blanket. Me and this blanket is going to be one. And then I just literally felt like, I don't like grass, but it started itching. So then I'm like, okay, let me get back on the blanket. But then, like you said, the noise and stuff like that kept coming at me. But then I was like, how's this going to go? And then I started thinking about what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then I was able to bring myself back.
Right. I'm sure there's other people that probably had a similar experience. Like, you know, your mind will take you away. Like when you think about grass, all of a sudden you're interacting with that. And then your body's feeling itchy and all this other
stuff. Grass allergy.
Right? Yes. Yes. Things. Yeah.
I think that just shows you the power of the mind, how like it can take a little thing and you can really get, you know, tossed around with it.
Yeah.
And I think the key piece there for everyone out there is recognizing that that's going to happen when you're practicing being present, right? Yeah. There's certain things that your mind is going to want to be taken away with. Mm-hmm. And you, just like you said, you notice that about yourself and you're really kind and gentle with yourself. With
bringing
you
back.
Know, yourself back. Yeah. Just like, you know, I'm on the cloud. I'm noticing the thought, you know, go away. I'm noticing that itch, that sensation. I'm not pushing it away. I'm not, you know, judging myself for having it. Mm-hmm. I'm just noticing it. And I think that's the difference between thoughts, you know, and thinking.
And thinking. Good deal. Good deal. It's a good start.
I think so.
It's definitely a good start. And I appreciate it.
You guys want to get into some pillow talk?
Yes.
Okay, so really our pillow talk segment is just our way of checking in with each other through the week, figuring out, you know, what we're committed to, and perhaps even having some intentions for how the podcast will go moving forward.
Yeah.
So tell us something about, or just try to think about something that you want to honor about yourself this week.
I think for me, I want to choose something I want to honor about myself in this moment. And then I'll go into this week, right? I think in this moment, this is like a big stepping stone for me.
Sure.
So I want to honor the fact that I'm honoring myself and being present with the experience and not really judging myself.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to take that through the week because there's a lot of new things that are happening for me. Mm-hmm. And I find myself to have like this future thinking about mm-hmm. how this is going to work. Is this going to work? Mm-hmm. Or how am I going to figure it out? And I get stuck in like trying to figure things out and not really experiencing the moment. Yeah. So I think that's what I'm going to be intentional about and honor that part of me that wants to be present.
Sure. What about you, Steph?
I want to honor me being tired this week. I've been doing a lot of traveling lately, and I also have an upcoming trip that's coming up, and I've just noticed the urge
to world-class like, traveler.
Want to sleep, mm-hmm. you know, want to kind of really like not do anything and mm-hmm. not judging myself for those things, because mm-hmm. I often will like tell myself that, come on, you need to hurry up, you know, and do push, your work push. And push. Yeah, yeah. You need to make that money that you just spent back as quickly as possible and stuff. So that I just want to honor my, you know, desire to rest, my desire to relax and, you know, take some time to myself.
Good deal.
I agree. I think we're all three on the same page with that. I definitely mm-hmm. want to, one, for sure, honor that, like, this being filmed for me is definitely stretching my limits, but I'm open to it. And, like, it's a new experience for me. I also definitely want to honor like taking care of myself, listening to my body, giving myself the rest that I need when I need it, letting myself feel my emotions when I need to. So I think we're all on the same page about that.
Yeah. And I think that can get lost, right? Mm-hmm. Specifically for, I think I was going to say women, but I think that's for everybody, right? Yeah. We get caught up in like doing the day to day of like doing everything and not really pausing. We are that thing that's making those things happen. Mm-hmm. So if we're that vessel, we got to honor that vessel. Yeah. And that's what we are. And I don't think we take time to just like honor ourselves and how we're pushing ourselves, how we're moving ourselves, how we are like getting things done, but also like resting.
Yeah.
Because we love traveling, right? But traveling sometimes can be tasking. It's not resting.
Yeah. So it is very taxing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that this is also something that can be very unique to therapists as well. Mm-hmm. Being a therapist, you always are often put in positions where you aren't able to stretch yourself mm-hmm. or like somebody is wanting something from you.
Naturally.
Yeah. So it can be hard to like keep balance with that and make sure that you are listening to say like, okay, you might want something from me, but I don't perhaps have it to give at mm-hmm. this particular time.
Yeah. And then is that hard for you, like for us, like being a counselor? Yeah, like you know how people come with the expectation you have the answer, but don't also think about the vessel and the human that you are.
Yeah, I think that in some ways, like if you're not careful, it can be dehumanizing in some ways to just be kind of put on this pedestal of like,
that's good,
you have all the answers,
that's
you
good,
not be making mistakes, you're healed.
Yep.
When in reality, like it is not, healing is not linear.
Yeah,
there's
for sure.
Things that happen in their life too that kind of take them off their mark, and sometimes it can be even harder to like find support within that because mm-hmm. of that idea that you're supposed to be like this superhuman that has all the mental answers.
I mean, it's even perpetuated in sessions. Like I've had clients say like, "Oh, you must have great relationships, your dating life must be awesome," and just this, and I'm just like,
right.
Talk to exes, I'm sure. Right,
say that. Somebody's story.
Right, exactly. And so I think like one of the things that I struggle with often is that fear of being put on a pedestal and being seen as, you know, perfect. Because one of the things that we are skilled at is the ability to be empathetic, to be kind, to be compassionate, to be understanding. And I, through my own work, like often will tell my clients, don't understand yourself into being mistreated. Yeah. And I feel like often I perpetuated that and have understood myself into being mistreated by people or being pushed, you know, because, you know, well, I'm stronger, or, you know, I can handle,
I have the skill set.
I can handle that, or I have more in the tank than other people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is just one of those beliefs that keeps us pushing and pushing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of, you know, accepting our vulnerabilities, our weaknesses, you know, those parts of us that aren't as glamorized by folks or even really acknowledged or accepted by people.
Sure.
You know what's ringing in my brain right now is the word dehumanize that you use.
Yeah.
that's a good, like for therapists, I don't think we stop to really consider that, you know, we just seen as this person, but not as like the human part of us, like the turning off part. So that's ringing in my head.
Grace, compassion. Hydrate came to mind, and I feel like a hydrate doesn't really only, you know, relate to H2O. It also like refers to other things that replenish us and give us life. I often think about this reel that I viewed a few months ago, probably last year, and it was talking about how, you know, people are experiencing fatigue and tiredness. And we know, you know, that depression, one of the symptoms of it is fatigue. And fatigue and tiredness are two different things, right? We recognize that, like, if you get 8 hours of sleep or the amount of sleep that you're supposed to get, if you still feel a sense of like dragging or just like, you know, disconnected, that's not tiredness, that's fatigue. That's showing you're disconnected. That means you're not being replenished, you know, or rejuvenated and things like that. And so I often think about, what other ways am I depleted or dry? You know, because even cacti, even succulents, even these other things that need limited water, they don't retain need water. Zero
that water. Retain night, right?
Exactly. Like, that's a part of it. And so often maybe the thing is like, what do I need to replenish and hydrate, you know, for myself? Is it spiritually? Is it, you know, practically in terms of drinking water? Or is it maybe, do I need to connect to something that I have not connected to in a while?
You know, didn't think about hydration like that, but it definitely like connecting that to the things that we deprived ourselves and replenishing. I like it. I like it.
So my commitments for this week that go along with the things that I want to honor, what I need in this moment definitely is needing to listen to myself, needing to give myself body rest. I'm committed to those things. I'm committed to taking a break. Have you put my phone on? Do not disturb.
Good, good. That part repeats, repeats.
Putting my phone on, do not disturb, taking a break. And doing that through the uncomfortable feelings of knowing that perhaps there are people that are going to be relying on me. And it may be painful for me to be absent during this time, and that's okay too.
How uncomfortable do you even feel even saying that?
I'm uncomfortable even talking about it because this is certainly not a side of me that people would see in my professional life for sure. I'm a Black woman. I definitely am like very much so like I get the job done. So like, that's like a very vulnerable thing for me to say.
We're going to be talking about that.
That's okay. I'm not necessarily saying that I don't care if people need me. I acknowledge that I do genuinely care, but I want to be able to honor those emotions and let them pass so that it doesn't take away from me resting.
Part of that replenishing. And hydrate.
I'm committed to resting when I need the rest, and noticing those feelings of, you know, guilt showing up later, because it doesn't happen when I'm actively resting. It comes when I guess I come face to face with my to-do list, or maybe some of these things that it's like I could have done, you know, at that time. So recognizing that feeling will show up, and then I made a choice, and, you know, radically accepting the things that will come with that choice, the positive experiences as well as those like negative ones as well. And I'm also committed to planning in a way that allows me to rest and also not be overwhelmed like later on as well too, right? Because sometimes I can kind of be a little extreme when it comes to like, like 2 weeks,
and
like,
you got 45,000
things to do.
Right. And that also like is even more anxiety provoking. So it's like, how do I balance both worlds of like taking that rest and also like carving out time to do those things, so I'm not super, you know, anxious at the end.
Also, even doing too much activities or planning can also, like, it may be fun whether you're going out, whether you like your social life and everything, but that can drain.
Oh, for sure.
You
to be like a planner in my like family. And every time I'm like, it's my else to do it. Please.
That could definitely be exactly.
Me having to plan what the rest looks like.
No, for sure. I think my theme is just open. Like I said in the beginning, I think it's like this week, I'm going to commit to just being open. Like I have a meeting tomorrow. I don't know how it's going to go. I'm like, the hell with it. Yeah. I was like, let me fucking be open to what's going on and see what it comes. Yeah, because it's like, how prepared can you be for, like, it's the whole idea of preparation, yeah. right? And I think I get stuck with that. So I think for me, and you know, I'm older, because I'm older than y'all. But but I mean, I'm gonna not that's give it a
older
card. I am because shit, because it's like I don't give it, like I give less shits, I think. And I think, but the more open I am, I think it gets me out of my rigidity of yeah. like, okay, Jay, like you need to do this. Or like, this is only one way. And I think I wanna be open to like, okay, let me look at like we always talk about in DBT, like all the sides of the refrigerator.
Yeah.
And also like honoring myself as I'm being open. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at.
I will say that, you know, knowing you professionally and personally, you are probably one of the most open people that I know, yeah. especially in the professional yeah. state.
1,000%. You know. Agreed.
You really, you know, pushed me in my professional life to move forward oh, with showing up more authentically. You. So,
yeah,
I appreciate the example from my older and wiser friends.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, I'm telling you, get into the 40s, chair. You can give a shit.
I would say that's definitely something that comes with maturity because I for sure give way less fucks than I did.
Than you did before, right? No, it's really cool. I don't even know who I was having this conversation with. It's like, we used to care so much about like, it's that performative behavior, yeah. what people think, how they say, how they show up. Because even for this, like this platform, I literally woke up this morning finding myself like, all right, I'm on my period. I'm feeling bloated. How am I going to look in these cameras? I even told my husband, I was like, yeah, I'm not feeling it. I'm feeling slow. And I came to a point, I think I was texting you guys, like, yeah, I just don't give a fuck. I was like, yeah, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm going to go with it. But it's the idea of, like, I guess that being present and also how sometimes we tend to be conditioned. Mm-hmm. Yes. We tend to, like, have this idea, like, this is how I need to show up in spaces. I think I'm at a point where I'm feeling tired of wanting to show up a certain way in spaces. So that's why I'm like, yeah, I just need to be open to it is what it is.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm always hearing like, okay, Jay, what do you think? No, I don't
want
to think,
I don't
actually.
Yeah. I don't want to give you input.
Right, that yeah. part. I don't want to think.
My experience was a little different. I had a certain level of like detachment and I didn't really care in my 20s that now, like when I'm in my 30s, the amount of care that is like I feel like ambushing me, like taking over. I like want to go back to that level of like not giving a fuck because I genuinely give so much. Like I'm like the level of anxiety. I never felt anxious before.
Yeah.
I never was like thinking about like what my parents are like getting closer to like dying or like fearful about like my siblings, like this, all this anxiety about like what is to come was not an experience I had before. But I also think because in my 20s it was all about achievement, like I was very much focused on success, like I need to graduate and I need to go to my master's program and then I need to get my hours so I can get my LC and then I need to get to go to Warden, excuse me, my LG and then my LC. So it was always about like when am I checking off. And so when you're in that drive mind, there's a certain level of detachment that comes along with that. So I didn't necessarily experience the caring so much because I was always focused on a goal. Like that was the only thing that really mattered, or at least that was, I feel like, was my compass. So like when I was done with those things, probably what?
But you got to talk about the culture part of why you...
Well, no, we're going to get there. But I feel like, I think, how old was I when we finally graduated? I think it was 2017. So what, 25? 26 years old. And at that point, then I was like, I felt lost because I'm like, well, what do I do now? Because all the energy and all the stuff that I put for that so
transition.
Long, I've completed, right? I've done all this stuff. And so it was a weird place to be where you go from like doing and drive to being and just existing like feeling oddly disconnected once you've reached the goal.
For sure.
I think that is something that is not talked about a lot.
Yeah.
That transition of like being so high achieving and then coming to more like a plateau where you're like, you're in it. The things that you wish for came true. What now? Like having to really slow yourself down around like, this is it.
Yeah.
The thing that I need to be enamored by right now is like the process.
You know what I say is that the what now It is the now.
It is the now.
Yeah. It is the now, right? Because yeah. I think the what now alludes to, like, there needs to be something when we tell ourselves. And that's why we can't sit with what is. So it is the now. And I think mm-hmm. that's part of the open and the present.
Yeah, I think it's ADHD.
That part too, Chad.
Yeah,
that part too, Chad.
The dopamine hit. That part, something to push and like something hype. To go towards. Yeah. And so when yeah. that isn't there, yeah. there and then comes the let me make things, let right. me do yeah. things, let me push myself towards. Now it's mm-hmm. people going back to school for the second, third, fourth, fifth degree.
True.
Putting yourself in relationships that probably, in hindsight, were not the best.
But yeah. For the thrill.
Right. But I needed something to do. Right.
Feeling like I succeeded at something.
Yeah,
I'm accomplished.
Like I'm an achievement. There's purposeful. Some thrill there. There's yes. some like excitement or what's next to come.
Yeah.
Things that are unpredictable.
Yeah.
Or getting the goal versus what you thought the goal was going to look yeah. like when you got it.
Yeah.
Because I think that's also a lot of it too. Is like mm-hmm. in my mind, seeing that the goal from my whatever age that I was at the time, right? Because mm-hmm. dreams change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the foundation of what you thought it was going to look like. And then mm-hmm. when you got there, you're like,
oh,
hmm.
It seems like more work is to be done, but it's like, there isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is no work to yeah. be done. The yeah. vision may need to shift right. or change or, yeah. you know, acknowledge that this is, you know, it.
Yeah, I think for sure.
Sometimes when we're like also like doing our forward thinking or planning ahead around what we want our goals to look like, we don't necessarily consider that like life is still going to happen to us. And there's so many like uncontrollable and painful
factors
that
yes.
happen that can kind of change the course of your goal or even your motivation to yeah. achieve that goal.
Yeah. That curveball. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that when you like tie that in terms of like, okay, like the pain that comes with, what's it called? Obtaining your goals or like mm-hmm. pursuing your goals, right? Mm-hmm. Pain is not something like in my culture, in I feel like in Black culture is something that, especially as a woman, right, that we acknowledge, yeah. we kind of like take it to the chin and just move
forward. We can
handle
forward, it strong.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think like when you said that thing of like, well, let's talk about the culture piece, I do think this thing around achievement, no matter what, like it's
yeah.
go for it, like go the distance.
Go like, sure, for sure. Sure. Like not achieve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, that but that's the culture, and but that's the whole point, I think, being people of color and being an immigrant. So I relate to the immigrant part of it, and yeah. I say that because that's my experience of it. And also looking at Black people as a whole and the idea of, remember, like you can talk to anybody. You need to be one step above your counterpart. Mm-hmm. Like, look how you know, look where you grew up. You know, look, see who you were around right. and what was the message that like you received around that.
I would say that my parents did not necessarily immigrate here, but they certainly lived with less than I grew up with. So mm-hmm. there was just a lot of culture around like one, like division, like this is how you're supposed to act mm-hmm. in order to be successful, mm-hmm. the way that people are supposed to look at you. Mm-hmm. And I also grew up around like a lot of people that didn't look like me. I think that it was more so like marketed
yeah.
as a mixing pot.
Yeah.
In reality, it was like very classist, very elitist. And if you did not necessarily meet those things, then you were excluded. So yeah. I think that that's where my performance came from.
Like, yep.
I kind of found ways to be able to fit into any and everything. Yeah. So in my adulthood, it was really hard to shed that. It was really yeah. hard to say like, okay, who are you authentically?
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
are you? What things are part of your culture? Yeah. What do you care about most?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that, that definitely came from that, my upbringing, and honestly, not growing up around enough Black people.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that is, like, probably one of my mm-hmm. most painful experiences. Yeah. Not being able to, like, feel more connected to people or having to always worry about, like, my race. And even at times where I didn't really understand that, like, racist things were happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that a lot of it I kind of understood in retrospect, like, as an adult. Like, oh, that mm-hmm. was a microaggression. Or, like, oh, perhaps they looked at me this way. Or perhaps mm-hmm. they wanted me to take tests because I was like a demographic that they wanted to
highlight. They couldn't even know, yeah, for sure.
Test scores mm-hmm. versus like because they genuinely felt like because this is something that I genuinely needed. Like mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. not a bad kid. I was impressed with those every day.
Yeah,
because I challenged people felt like I should not
you're not going with the norm.
I had that type of power.
Yeah.
And see, and that's where it's interesting because I feel like performance in homes where like parents immigrated, because I was an immigrant myself. Mm-hmm. Like it's not even my parents. Like I am not a a citizen by birth, you know, that comes here. But the performance comes in you having to assimilate.
Yeah. Yes.
So having to assimilate and, you know, as a way of like everybody else, all your peers are speaking this way, dressing this way.
Yep.
Right? And so you're both wanting to assimilate, right? To be part of everybody else, but your parents want you to assimilate in a particular way. Which unfortunately is close to whiteness. Because that is the majority, that is the one that is respected, that is the person that has the power, right? So the performance comes in a slightly different way. Right? You're performing for your parents, right? Because part of you wants to just be like everybody else. Without repercussion or consequence.
You know, it's funny you talk about the way you look and stuff like that. And my mother literally is upset with herself after this. I remember coming here for my sister and I had like pretty nice hair. And my mother put a Jerry curl on her hair because of the idea of the hair, needing to look a certain way and needing to be that way. And it damaged our hair so bad. And then, girl, set up. It's like the, what is it? The Eddie Murphy coming back to America when you get up and then you be having the juice and the stick. And I was like, the sheen and the spray. But it was for her. It was like this look that we had to, because, you know, she didn't want us to be so different.
Yeah.
Didn't want us to, like, feel like we didn't belong. And I remember feeling like, this is not me. Like, I don't like it. And, you know, I was unruly as a child. So I remember just like, I remember putting a cap on my head and like really say, you look like a boy. Why? This is not high. And I would go just like that. I said, what is this? And then the curl was it.
Right, curling. But you see, finding ways that we can to make it work as best as we can. Right?
Yeah.
You're putting a hat on. People are going to school, and I know people wearing completely different outfits when they're at school, right? You know, it's you wanting to figure out a way to like balance both, like walking that middle path, as you know, as much as possible. And so I think often that like comfort in being yourself shows up when you're outside of like those lights. Like it always felt like growing up, like people were always watching me, like, or like someone was gonna report back to my parents. Mind you, when you think about it now, as an adult, my parents didn't know that many people.
They did it.
I was snitching on myself.
Right. Not that many folks, but just because the things that they would like somehow stumble to knowing, like you just think like your parents have so much reach. And like, and mind you, also in African community, people talk.
They all know each other.
Somebody's always running their mouth about something. Quick to be like, oh, well, this person did this or this person did that. Like, you know, so it's this proverbial feeling of like big brother, like something always is on me, right? And so like being able to fully relax is not something that you feel, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then also on top of that, the ingrained servitude that also comes with being a Black person, a Black woman. It doesn't matter if you are from the motherland or part of the diaspora or adjacent in some way.
Yes.
There's, you know, or a person of color, there's a just ingrained servitude that comes and stuff. So it's not surprising that therapists, counselors, social workers are predominantly women.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, agreed.
Okay, agreed. I think this is a nice segue into our Insight from the Couch segment around vulnerability. So tell us a little bit more about how you all saw vulnerability.
The big V. It's what I call Lumi, the big V. I actually viewed it as weakness. For me, I was, you know, your little tomboy, like, when I, especially, you know, it's crazy you talk about assimilating here, and I feel, migrating here, is that I think that was my vulnerability. I think I became, I went from being, like, a happy, jovial child back home in Haiti, which was, I had a great, I mean, I had a blessing, great lifestyle. And to come here and feel so isolated, and being teased and things like that, I think that made me vulnerable.
Yeah.
And it turned me into like this person that was in me mm-hmm. that was not so kind, I would say, that, you know, you tend to kind of lose yourself. So I feel like that's the part that kind of made me vulnerable. So getting, when, you know, as growing up, even older, I think it wasn't until maybe when I did my work in my 20s where vulnerability didn't become weak for me and I embraced it. But anyone who would appear to be like sensitive or like expressive and things like that, I'd be like, something's wrong. Like, but for me now, vulnerability, I think, is such a strength.
Yeah.
There's weakness and strength. And I think that's how I view vulnerability is in a sense of like being naked and knowing that you're flawed and also embracing that in spite of.
For sure, for sure. I think the idea of vulnerability being something that is labeled as a weakness is like very much some like intergenerational trauma. Like if you really think about the ideas around like safety, like why it would be necessary for you to like always be on, always be vigilant, to perhaps not show vulnerabilities at some point in our, in African American culture, for sure, like that is something that could have potentially gotten killed. So I know that that is something that was passed down generation to generation. Like, the women in my family are like very hard. Like they're very much like, I can take this.
Yeah.
I can do this. We show no emotion.
Yeah.
I'm in my 30s and I've probably seen my mom cry like twice in my entire life.
Wow.
So
that
was very confusing experience for me. Like, what does it mean for you to be vulnerable? Does that mean that I'm like getting in trouble? Am I going to be losing something? Or am I going to be putting myself in danger to be vulnerable? I think even to this day, that's something that I struggle with. Just opening myself up to people, to partners, to things like that. Or to just like opening myself up to being perceived by others.
Yes.
Which, again, why this is such a blessing that is also a little bit painful for me to be doing the podcast, because the idea of like being perceived.
Being seen. Like in a way where without any protection. Right? You know, without any shielding and things of that nature. So for me, vulnerability was shown in two complete opposites. I had a parent who was very in touch with, you know, their vulnerabilities, was very much able to go there and had no problem showing people, you know, their soft, gushy parts. At the same time, I had another parent who guarded their vulnerabilities very ferociously and did not want, you know, folks to see that part of them, because it was abused, it was taken for granted, it was used against folks, right? And so, and I also, from, because of the way my home was growing up, there's a lot of tension and chaos and just things that were like destabilizing in between the love and the foundation and the things that we built. I saw how people's vulnerabilities were used against them. And so for me, immediately recognizing that that is something that people use to try to control you, try to, you know, get you to do the things that they want you to do. And so I immediately learned to not engage
not
and
much.
See
not
it.
Show your cards.
Exactly. And see that as a weakness, because that's something at the same time, see it as a weakness, while also ferociously defending people that I thought were unfairly being victimized. I do not bully folks, but let someone, because I also was bullied. I was bullied when I was young for the trying to assimilate my hair, my skin, my things. We'll get into being a dark skinned woman or a chocolate woman, you know, since things that we all share,
right?
You know, we'll talk about that, but like, I was bullied a lot. And so one thing that I do not play with is when other people are being bullied just because you want to feel bigger. I noticed that a lot.
I think the fucked up thing about that is that like when people are in that space where they're doing the bullying, they don't even recognize that that's what it is.
Yeah.
They are likely having their own experiences of feeling like less than and like not enough.
For sure. Yeah.
But I mean, vulnerability, right, is something that I think that we're definitely going to delve further in when we talk about the different.
This is definitely to be continued.
Yeah.
This is a good place for us to kind of talk about other populations, but we're gonna end here for the time being. But I'm Stephanie.
I am Sparkle Fact.
And I am Jay, aka Judalyn, the one,
yes,
the Haitian.
And we hope you join us again next time.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.